he had claims. Even recently, there was people saying, we went to Coffee County and we imaged everything. There's no evidence of any of that. It didn't happen.
Actually, it did happen, and you're lying. Why is the Georgia Secretary of State lying?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Covering up.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am... From Pacifica Radio in sweltering Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN and Eureka's KGOE, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW, Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, in Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WMHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's, AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be joined momentarily by our old friend Marilyn Marks with new news on the Georgia Secretary of State cover-up. Yes, it's a cover-up of, at least as far as I'm concerned, we'll see if Marilyn agrees, cover-up of Team Trump election crimes in the great state of Georgia. That's coming up momentarily. It's a story that we have been following for many, many months now. In fact, broke, I think, on the broadcast media ourselves earlier this year. New news on that coming up, but a quick update to kick things off on the unprecedented heat wave slamming the West right now and reaching all the way up to Canada from our tiny, sweltering, air-conditioned-free second-floor Bradcast World News headquarters studio.
Oh, the fun never stops.
Here in Southern California. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi. It's hot.
It is hot, ain't it? Amid this record heat wave out here in California, shattering records for both temperature and duration, by the way, the state narrowly avoided blackouts on Tuesday for a second successive day, even as blistering temperatures pushed electricity demand to an all-time record and stretched the state's power grid close to its limits. But as it turns out, the sweltering people of California stepped up to meet the challenge. Who says you can't face a crisis by conserving? The state imposed its highest level of energy emergency for several hours late Tuesday and urged customers to turn off lights, curb air conditioners, shut off power-hungry appliances, and so forth after a day of extraordinary stress on the electricity infrastructure. As temperatures in many regions topped 110 degrees Fahrenheit, yes?
Yes, the state was able to avoid any kind of mandatory or rolling blackouts. These were all voluntary conservation measures, and they worked.
So far, we'll see how it goes
so
for the rest of the week.
Yeah, there's still more to come.
Electricity use easily broke a record that had stood since 2006. According to the state, in response, there was a emergency alert issued directly to cell phones in several counties asking for immediate power conservation. Did you get one of those messages,
Desi?
I
did.
So did I. And in response to those alerts, grid data shows that demand plunged in response. So good for us. Emergency measures were finally lifted at about 9 p.m. local time on Tuesday as the record heat continued into the evening and will continue to do so for the next several days, at least until the weekend. The Governor Gavin Newsom tweeted just before 9 p.m. on Tuesday night, record-breaking temperatures, more demand on our energy grid than ever, but we avoided emergency power outages tonight. We can do this, he said. If we keep it up, we can get through this unprecedented heat wave. Well, we will see. He did note, we are not out of the woods yet. Indeed, we aren't. The state's largest power company, PG&E, which for some reason is still in business, they said on earlier on Tuesday that they had notified about 500,000 homes and businesses that they could lose power for up to 2 hours. That warning came as temperatures in downtown Sacramento hit 116 degrees. Now, Sacramento is the state's capital. It's pretty far north in the state, so it usually gets nowhere near those kind of temperatures. What will it take to end this record-breaking misery, which longtime meteorologist and friend of the show Guy Walton described on a scale from a 1 to 10 as an 11 for September weather? Well, apparently it'll take a hurricane. A break from the heat, at least according to weather officials, will come across Southern California late this week, thanks to Hurricane Kay in the Pacific Ocean. Kay is forecast to edge up the coastline of Mexico's Baja California Peninsula as it moves north. The storm will pump moisture and clouds into Southern California and Arizona, taking an edge off the heat. So thank you, Kay, in advance. though I should note that Kay itself is a dangerous storm. I believe it's killed 3 people already in Mexico. It gained strength in the Pacific on Wednesday, and it has been lashing Mexico's Baja California Peninsula with wind and drenching rains. Forecasters said there's a chance outer bands of the big storm could bring heavy rain, which is good because we need it. And
we're kind of in a 1,200-year historic drought, so yeah.
Yeah, we kind of need it. So that is good, but also possibly flash floods, which is bad because it leads to mudslides and other problems. But that could happen in parts of scorched Southern California and southwestern Arizona Friday night and Saturday. Forecasters expect Kay to stay offshore as it moves northward along the coast. But it is an expansive storm with tropical storm force winds extending up to 230 miles from the center. But wait, that's not all when it comes to the latest news from our worsening climate emergency. Strong winds and blistering temperatures will set the stage for new wildfires to spread uncontrollably in parts of the U.S. Northwest and Northern Plains this week. That, according to forecasters, who said the dangerous conditions will sweep into the Central Plains by Thursday. The National Weather Service warned of, quote, extremely critical fire conditions across 22,000 square miles in northern Montana alone, including the city of Great Falls. Near record temperatures, wind gusts of up to 60 miles per hour. This is all going great, isn't it? And tinder dry fuel means that fires could spread rapidly. Portions of western Montana, Oregon, Northern California, Idaho, and Washington State also face critical wildfire danger. The risk shifts to the south and east as of Thursday, with warnings issued for areas of South Dakota, Nebraska, and Idaho. Nearly 54 million people were under heat warnings and advisories across the West as temperature records were shattered in many areas. So, our rocky and dangerous climate crisis ride continues out here in the West and into the Great Plains.
And September is offering no relief yet.
And we will continue to whine about it as the week progresses.
Stay safe out there, guys.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the nation in Massachusetts, it was the penultimate primary election day for this year's midterm election season on Tuesday, with the final day of midterm primaries now set for next Tuesday in Delaware, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, the final 3 states to hold primaries this year. And as suggested on our previous broadcast, we may be looking at a similar situation in the race for Massachusetts governor now, as we saw in Maryland back in July, where an outgoing yet popular yet normalish, moderate Republican governor in an otherwise liberal state could well be replaced this year by a Democrat or by an insane Trump-backed Republican nominee. That's Maryland. In Maryland, GOP voters chose the insane Trump-backed Dan Cox for their nominee to face off against the Democratic nominee, Wes Moore, who's now the favorite to flip the governor's mansion in Maryland from red to blue. He'd also, by the way, be the state's first African-American governor. Today, a similar story appears to be unfolding in Massachusetts, the only state that held a primary this week, where Jeff Deal, a former state rep and a 2020 election denier endorsed by former President Donald Trump, appears to have fairly easily won the Republican nomination for Massachusetts governor over businessman Chris Doughty, who was considered to be the more moderate candidate in the race. The victory for Deal sets up a general election contest against Democratic Attorney General Maura Healey, who would be the first openly gay person and the first woman elected governor of Massachusetts if she wins in November after the state's current governor, Republican Charlie Baker, had decided against seeking a third term. Maura Healey, who's also, she's been very good on climate, by the way, hasn't she?
Oh,
she's
my,
brought up
some
important climate cases.
Yes, she has brought suit against the major oil companies mm-hmm. for lying to the public and investors about climate change and what they knew.
Well, let's hope that whoever replaces her is as good as she was on that. Her only rival for the nomination for governor dropped out of the race. Healey will now be the heavy favorite in November against Deal in one of the most liberal states in the nation. Deal has ties to Donald Trump that stretch back to 2016. He served as the co-chair for Trump's presidential campaign in Massachusetts. He has also opposed COVID-19 protocols. He's hailed the Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. That may not go over well in the one of the most liberal states in the nation, where Republicans make up less than 10% of the electorate. But that's who Republican voters chose to run for governor on Tuesday, it looks like. If the name Jeff Deal otherwise sounds familiar, it may be because he faced a similar struggle when he challenged Democratic U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren back in 2018.
Oh, yes. Okay, now I remember.
He won a three-way Republican primary at the time, only to capture just over a third of the vote in the general election. So his record on statewide elections is not great. Massachusetts does have a history, however, of electing fiscally conservative and socially moderate Republican governors, including former governors William Weld and Mitt Romney. Remember? That, as AP describes it, to provide a check on overwhelming Democratic legislative majorities in the state. Whether Deal can pretend to be such a moderate Republican between now and November, well, that remains to be seen, but is considered unlikely. Tuesday's elections also featured several statewide contested Democratic primaries, including for Attorney General and Secretary of the Commonwealth. Former Boston City Councilor Andrea Campbell defeated workers' rights attorney Shannon Liss Reardon in the Democratic primary for Attorney General. Campbell would be the first black woman to hold the office in Massachusetts if elected in November. She'll face Republican Jay McMahon, a trial attorney who previously ran against Healey. The Commonwealth's current attorney general and current Democratic candidate for governor, McMahon lost to Healey at the time. Incumbent Democratic Secretary of the Commonwealth William Galvin, who is vying for an incredible eighth term in office. Well, he defeated fellow Democrat Tanisha Sullivan, president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. He'll face Republican Rayla Campbell, no relation to the new Democratic AG nominee, Andrea Campbell, in November. Rayla Campbell, if successful, would be the first black person to serve as the Secretary of the Commonwealth, if elected. None of the state's nine incumbent Democratic U.S. House members faced primary challengers. There were two contested Republican primaries in the 8th and 9th congressional district. That's what we now know at this hour out of Massachusetts for now, given that the state mercifully allows all voters to vote on hand-marked paper ballots. Hopefully that means there will be few problems arising as votes are tallied and canvassed as the 2022 primary season nears its conclusion. Just one more week to go, folks. But when it comes to the election that never seems to end, the 2020 presidential election and the massive amount of fraud committed around that election, no, not by Joe Biden or voters who supported him, but by Republicans who were duped into falling for Trump's lies about massive fraud, or maybe they weren't duped, maybe they just wanted to. Well, those Republicans, and even some of them that didn't fall for his lies about fraud, are once again in the spotlight today with new news out of the never-ending quest for election integrity in the great state of Georgia. For that, including new evidence of Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's cover-up, yes, cover-up of criminal activity by Trump's MAGA warriors. Well, that is next on the broadcast with the one and only Marilyn Marks, who, if you have read anything about what is now going on in Georgia, specifically Coffee County, Georgia, well, Marilyn Marks is responsible for the fact that you know about it. She is responsible for the media reporting on any of it. All of that new news is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Hey, this is Desi. The broadcast and the Green News Report survive thanks to you and your support. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us stay independent every day over your public airwaves. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yes, I'm going back to Georgia.
Going back.
Where my memory strays to the southern ways of my youthful yesterdays.
Feels like we never left. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Will we ever get out of Georgia? Back in May of this year, we were the first broadcast outlet, I believe, to break the news about an otherwise unreported breach of voting system hardware and software by Trump-supporting Republicans at the Board of Elections office in Coffee County, Georgia, a rural Republican-leaning county about 200 miles south of Atlanta. The news came about thanks to a recorded phone call from one of those Trump-supporting MAGA election deniers, an Atlanta businessman by the name of Scott Hall, who, for reasons that are still not entirely clear to me, called the plaintiff in a long-running lawsuit against Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and pretty much confessed the entire plot to that plaintiff, Marilyn Marks of the Coalition of Good Governance. Her group, after successfully winning their lawsuit to ban Georgia's 100% unverifiable, nearly 20-year-old touchscreen voting systems made by Diebold some years earlier, has long been challenging Secretary Raffensperger's ill-considered scheme to replace those old touchscreens with newer unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Dominion. Marks, a longtime frequent guest on this program, was smart enough to record that call from Scott Hall, including his confession, essentially, that he helped to fund a bunch of election deniers to fly into Coffee County, Georgia, to make unlawful copies of the voting system's highly sensitive software, which is also used, thanks to Raffensperger's mandate, in every single county in the battleground state of Georgia, not to mention almost a dozen other states around the country. Here's what some of that call sounded like, and you can hear Marilyn's amazement in response to what Scott Hall was telling her.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. I went down there, we scanned every freaking ballot. You know, the same people that went up to Michigan, okay, and did all that forensic stuff on the computers, and they sent their team down to Coffee County, Georgia, and they scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives, and scanned every single ballot.
They imaged the hard drives?
Yes.
How in the world did you get permission to do that?
We basically had the entire elections committee there. Okay? And they said, we give you permission. Go for it.
Okay. Wow. The audio from that phone call was included as evidence in Marx's long-running lawsuit against Secretary Raffensperger, which hopes to move the state from unverifiable touchscreen voting systems to verifiable hand-marked paper ballots. After the evidence of that call finally went public, thanks to smart investigative reporting from folks like Emma Brown at Washington Post, Kate Brumback at AP, Raffensperger's office claimed that, well, they had known about the breach, sort of, and that the state had been investigating it, sort of. In fact, Marx found no evidence that Raffensperger's office had investigated the matter at all, as she joined us in June to explain on this program and discuss what appeared at the time to be a potential cover-up by the Georgia Secretary of State, a cover-up by the man who defied the advice of voting systems and cybersecurity experts to choose new unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Dominion instead of paper ballot systems, and then, of course, forced every county in the state to use those unverifiable touchscreens at the polling place. The man who, at the same time, has somehow been regarded as a bit of a hero because he refused to help Donald Trump steal the 2020 election, as you may recall from that infamous recorded phone call where the disgraced now former president is heard asking Raffensperger to, quote, find just enough votes that would be needed to flip the state that Joe Biden won to a stolen victory for Donald Trump. Since the evidence of the Coffee County voting system breach has come to light, thanks to several national media outlets, including our own, it has incredibly, by the way, been ignored largely by some of Georgia's largest media outlets. But new national reporting has tied the Coffee County breach to a number of similar ones in other states, including Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada, all of which, we have now learned, appears to have been coordinated by Team Trump and led up by the disgraced Trump attorney, Sidney Powell. A lot of incremental evidence of these crimes and who was involved in them, specifically in Coffee County, including members of the County Board of Elections itself there and the Coffee County GOP, has been pouring out via national media in recent months. On Tuesday, via Washington Post and CNN and AP, we learned that security camera surveillance video outside of the Coffee County Board of Elections revealed a whole passel of these folks arriving at the office on January 7, 2021, the day after Trump's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. They were arriving there, as Scott Hall suggested in that recorded phone call, to make unlawful copies of the county's voting systems. A number of these people had testified previously in the coalition's lawsuit that they were not at the Board of Elections that day, or they knew nothing about what happened. Further surveillance video from subsequent days after January 7 of 2021 shows that others like Doug Logan, remember him, the dude whose now defunct company Cyber Ninjas later oversaw that joke of a post-election forensic audit in Maricopa County, Arizona, the one that confirmed Joe Biden's 2020 victory over Donald Trump in that battleground state. Well, that Doug Logan is seen on the surveillance video coming in to the Coffee County, Georgia Elections Board over several days. Why? Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis has taken notice of all of this. She has begun to include investigation of this incident and the fake electors plot in Georgia in her criminal conspiracy investigation of Trump's attempt to steal the 2020 election in the Peach State. But all the while, Secretary of State Raffensperger's office appears to have taken little or no action despite suggesting otherwise. For example, as Washington Post reported on Tuesday in its story on the surveillance video, quote, In spring of 2021, after Coffee County Elections Board Director Misty Hampton resigned, she was the one who allegedly allowed these MAGA folks into the office to copy the software. The Cyber Ninja guy, Doug Logan's business card, was found on her desk by her successor, James Barnes. Barnes sent a copy of the card to the Secretary of State's office, expressing alarm in light of the fact that the Justice Department had raised concerns about the ballot review led by Cyber Ninjas in Arizona. That, according to an email obtained by the Post. An investigator in the Secretary of State's office was directed to follow up with county officials and, quote, verify what, if any, contact Cyber Ninjas had with election equipment, according to emails. But Barnes said in a sworn deposition in Marilyn Mark's coalition lawsuit that state officials never contacted him at all. Well, now, thanks to that lawsuit, we know that, in fact, Doug Logan made repeated visits to the Coffee County offices for hours at a time, according to that surveillance video. What was he doing there? And what is going on here overall? Why is Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and his office seemingly covering all of this up? And why is Marilyn Marks, a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the Secretary of State, seemingly doing all of the investigation that Raffensperger should have and could have done long ago? She'll join us momentarily to answer some of those questions, but just one more point I want to get on record. In late August, the AP's Kate Brumback reported in a story on all of this that, quote, Ryan Germany, a general counsel for the Georgia Secretary of State's office, said in a declaration filed on August 2 that the office opened an investigation in mid-March and brought in an expert to perform a forensic inspection of the Coffee County election server. The next steps, he said, are to complete the forensic investigation and interview witnesses. So presumably, that means the office opened an investigation in mid-March of 2022. And yet, the following month, in April of this year, at an event at the Carter Center in Atlanta, supposedly on, quote, restoring confidence in American elections, Raffensperger's top deputy, Gabe Sterling, who famously, after the 2020 election, you may remember him, he went before the cameras to angrily call on Trump supporters to stop their harassment of Georgia election workers before someone gets killed. Remember that guy? Well, he was at the Carter Center, and he referenced the Coffee County breach by saying on April 29th of this year at the Carter Center that it never happened.
We had claims, even recently, there was people saying, we went to Coffee County, and we imaged everything. There's no evidence of any of that. It didn't happen.
No evidence of that? Really? So, to summarize, AP reported that Raffensperger's general counsel, Ryan Germany, claimed they opened an investigation in mid-March into Coffee County. But in late April, Raffensperger's top lieutenant, Gabriel Sterling, says no evidence. It didn't happen. And now, videotaped evidence gathered via public records requests and subpoenas, thanks to Marilyn Marks, shows that it did absolutely happen, and the evidence for it is plain as day, based on videotaped proof from more than a year and a half ago that apparently Raffensperger's office never even bothered to try and obtain. Finally, however, the good news, I guess, after all of this, Raffensperger and the Georgia Bureau of Investigations are reportedly said to finally be investigating. So, who has Raffensperger subpoenaed in this case? Scott Hall, the Atlanta businessman who confessed the entire plot to Marilyn Marks by phone? How about Misty Hampton, the Coffee County election official who let the Trumpers make illegal copies of the county's voting system software? How about Kathy Latham, the county's Republican Party chair, who testified that, she was only there that day for, quote, just a few minutes, and she couldn't remember any other details. at least until evidence, video evidence this week, appears to show that she was at the Coffee County Board of Elections. She was the one greeting the Sidney Powell hired technicians before spending several hours there herself with them. How about Sidney Powell? Was she subpoenaed or disgraced cyber ninja Doug Logan? Nope. The first subpoena for documents and testimony that appears to have been sent out by Brad Raffensperger's office went to, wait for it, Marilyn Marks. Joining us now is Marilyn Marks, longtime expert advocate for free and fair elections and champion of election integrity and government transparency as executive director of the nonpartisan nonprofit Coalition for Good Governance.org. Marilyn, it has been a bunch of months, but welcome back to the broadcast.
Well, thank you so much, Brett. Thank you so much for having me. I always love doing this. It's been a bunch of months, but some things haven't changed.
Some things haven't, but a lot of things have. And
well,
you know,
have they?
I had to skip a lot of details there, Marilyn, because all of this has, a lot of material has come to light in recent days, thanks to you, I should underscore. But before I get to some of my questions, did I screw up any particular points there? Did I miss any big points that need to be mentioned here?
It was all perfect. Okay. Better than any report we have heard yet. We've heard a lot of reports in the last 24 hours.
Okay, good. Glad to hear. Now, I'm certainly interested in what the hell the Trumpers were doing there when they were copying the voting system software in Coffee County, as we have seen elsewhere in the state and in Pennsylvania and Colorado, where, by the way, listeners may recall Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters. She's now facing 10 criminal charges in Colorado for having done the same thing. But I'm also interested, perhaps even more interested, in Raffensperger's apparent cover-up of all of this. He is... Marilyn, after all, he's running for re-election this year, presumably overseeing his own election as Secretary of State. Am I right to call this a cover-up by Raffensperger at this point? And if so, why is he covering it up from what you've been able to learn through the evidence you've gathered?
Well, it certainly doesn't look like a sincere effort to have a diligent investigation. Let's compare this to what's gone on in Michigan and in Colorado, mm-hmm. as you did. You know, immediately when these things were found out last year that Tina Peters had a copying of the EMS, mm-hmm. and then in Antrim, Michigan, when the officials there found out, the attorney general, the state election official, went after the perpetrators who did that. And we're looking at Michigan right now, mm-hmm. where there's a special prosecutor with 9 targets, mm-hmm. 9 people he's targeted. 5 of them are involved in Georgia, but none of them have even been interviewed in Georgia. Their names have not surfaced other than through us. And, you know, the secretary does not seem to want to know. Secretary and the State Election Board. State Election Board actually has the authority mm-hmm. to investigate and to have the secretary help investigate. Neither seem to be terribly interested. And I think the point that you made about this video, a lot of people think this video came from an investigation by the state. Uh-huh. Oh, no. Right. Oh, no. They have not even asked for it.
Wow.
What, you know, wouldn't investigation 101, wouldn't the investigator that had just done investigation 101 have long ago pulled the video surveillance tapes?
If you were doing a real investigation, which they do not appear to be doing. And just to be clear, Marilyn, so you mentioned the investigations going on in Michigan, in Colorado, some charges already brought in Colorado. Essentially, what they're investigating in that case, in those states, is the same thing that yes. happened here in Georgia exactly, correct?
Exactly, other than in those two cases, it is a much more minor, it is important, it's mm-hmm. very important, it's very serious, but mm-hmm. not nearly as serious as Georgia, because, one, there, those are on a county-by-county basis. Mm-hmm. It's not a uniform system mm-hmm. across Colorado and Michigan. Mm-hmm. They don't have uniform programming where one person does all the programming of the equipment. And
as you well know, they work on hand-marked paper ballots and have audits, something Georgia doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk in Georgia of what happened, although the kind of the same technology issues happened, the risk in Georgia is a hundredfold or more of the, I can't even begin to estimate how much greater the risk is. And that's something, Brad, that you get, but I will tell you the rest of the press, the news organizations are just not getting that yet.
And that's because they use the same systems Raffensperger forces all of the counties to use, these very same systems. So
and then centrally programs every machine.
And we've discussed it before. So is that what makes it so alarming that these folks are making copies of this software? Is that because it will now give them the opportunity to game the systems in future elections in these other counties in the states and even in other states around the country that use the same systems?
Well, I think Philip Stark on your program just about a year ago described it as having a working model if you're going to be a bank robber, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you've got a working model now to test your intrusion into the system, to test the malware that you can create, to test all the many different ways that you can intrude into the system.
And
they now have a working model. And remember, in Georgia's case, as you have told your listeners so many times, Georgia's operating with touchscreens where the hacks that may happen, the malware that may be deployed, cannot be detected.
Right.
Different than an optical scanner.
Correct. Hand-marked paper ballots. And,
right.
But I mean, so is this why they were doing what they were doing? Were they trying to get this information so they could game elections? They claim that, oh, they're trying to prove there was fraud in 2020.
Well, you know, we don't know their motivations. And their motivations may have been on many different levels. And we will probably never really know all of their motivations, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly some of them wanted to see, even at that late date, Biden never get inaugurated. You know, they were looking for ways to still try to seize the voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall, the draft executive orders that Trump, of course, never was able to sign, many people don't know that Coffee County was one of the three counties mentioned in that draft executive order trying to seize the voting machines as justification for the seizing of the nation's voting machines. Coffee County, as you pointed out, is a tiny little county.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single vote could have been counted wrong and it wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
But what they got was they got the software for the entire state by coming into Coffee County.
So that clip of Gabe Sterling that I played from the Carter Center sort of sniffing at the notion that there was a software breach in Coffee County, claiming, quote, it never happened. He is, you know, sort of the right-hand man of Raffensperger. That was a month after the lead attorney in Raffensperger's own office says that they began an investigation. And then a month later, he says, oh, we looked into it, it never happened. So was Sterling lying in his comments on that panel at the Restoring Confidence in American Elections panel at Carter Center? Or did he not know? Or his office knew but didn't tell him? What is going on there?
It's hard to know, but we do know he was not telling the truth. And whatever was happening, he would have known about it. He is very, very tied to the daily operations. But, Brad, as you know, about every week, starting in March, I was writing the Coffee County Board of Elections public records request saying, have you heard anything from the secretary or the state election board? Send me any correspondence you have. Every week, they would roll their eyes at me and say, no, it's just like we told you last week. We haven't heard a word. And that went on through all of the spring and summer. And into, it turned out in the very last part of July, early August, finally the Secretary of State's attorneys started saying, well, we would like to think about coming down to think about setting up some appointments. They started to set up some appointments in August, and then they aborted them, and now have decided to wait until this month.
Which, which is, you know, that I mentioned that the new guy who came in to run the Coffee County elections noticed that business card from the Cyber Ninjas guy, Doug Logan.
Yes.
He's seen repeatedly coming in after the that initial day, January 7, 2021. What was Doug Logan, the Cyber Ninjas guy, doing there? Do we have any sense why he was coming back again and again and again?
We have no idea. And, Brad, we just learned of his appearance on the scene when we got the videos last week. We were shocked to be scrolling through the videos, and sure enough, there's Doug Logan on the 18th and 19th of January, and he has a guy with him by the name of Jeffrey Lindbergh. His name's not as well known, but he had been very involved with DiPerno and the Antrim situation as well.
Michigan,
as,
yeah.
Yes, okay. So he's a known guy in that circle, if you will. So he was with Doug Logan for those 2 days. Lo and behold, we keep going through the video. He comes down for the entire next week. And he lives in New Mexico, so it's not like he's just passing through right. Douglas every day.
And there's no... we don't yet know why they were doing this, why they were coming back day after day, but... This information from this videotape, we need to underscore, Raffensperger could have asked for this over a year and a half ago.
Yes.
That's when it happened, and it's only now coming out this week in September of 2022. Now, Marilyn Marks, why are you being subpoenaed as part of Raffensperger's investigation into all of it? Look, you do have information. Scott Hall, that guy, called you. You recorded it. You have information of sort of, you know, how all of this was kicked off. But
right.
Couldn't Raffensperger have asked you for any documents or
testimony? Well, certainly. And as a plaintiff, we have obligations to continue to supply the other side with the, you know, relevant discovery documents, which we, of course, will do. The only reason to subpoena me was to try to continue their, it's really a ridiculous kind of argument that, oh, this is all Marilyn Marks' fault, that Marilyn Marks should have told them about, you know, the Scott Hall phone call far earlier as one of my friends said, yeah, then they could have started doing nothing even earlier.
Well,
but, you know, they're trying to pretend that they had no evidence, they had no reason to know anything, and that somehow they are way behind because they just didn't know about this. Well, obviously, even if you believe that, which is complete nonsense, but, you know, we played this for Gabe Sterling's deposition on February the 24th. They did not pick up the phone at that point. You would think they would and say, hey, tell us everything you know because we need to investigate. No, they stalled and stalled. And even during my deposition, which occurred a few weeks later, I tried to talk about Coffee County. And every time I would try to raise Coffee County in my deposition, they would decide that they didn't want to talk about that. They'd talk about something else. Mm-hmm. So they have avoided this. We didn't talk about... Brad, that back in December of 2020 and January of 2021, the Secretary of State was conducting an investigation down in Coffee County, you know, Misty and some of the other things she had been up to, including leaving her password for her server, the EMS server, sitting out in public and then posting it on the Internet. Well, you would think that at that moment, when they did that, that was in January 2021, you would think that they would say, you know what, given that the doors have been unlocked and she's posted the password on the Internet, then we should look at the surveillance video and see if any bad guys have been in here.
But you they would, didn't. Yeah.
You know, no, it has been, they have looked the other way, and you and I could go through a whole timeline of month after month after month after month, more and more clues that they should have done something. And at some point you have to wonder, were they purposely doing nothing?
It sure seems like it. I don't understand why. I mean, it seems, frankly, like they knew about all this information because you've been sharing it with them in your lawsuit, but it wasn't until, am I right to say it wasn't until heat from the media finally forced them to do something about this?
We believe that is true. And certainly Judge Totenberg, as we kept going to Judge Totenberg in our case and asking her for discovery and asking her for information, and that she kept asking them, well, when did you take this server? Did you try to get Dominion to help you with this? Mm-hmm. And she kept asking them questions, and they didn't have answers for them. I'm sure they were feeling some heat from that. They were certainly feeling heat from the press. They were getting calls all the time. And Brad, apparently they were telling reporters for months, oh, Marilyn Marx is making this up. There is nothing to anything she's saying. She's making it up, and no reporter worth their salt is paying any attention
to
her.
Wow. Well, I guess I was paying attention to you, so that's maybe. Anyway, Marilyn, do you know, has anybody, I got just a couple of minutes here, I want to get through a bunch of quick questions. Do you know, has anyone else, other than you, been subpoenaed in Raffensperger's investigation?
Not that we know of, no.
All of these people,
they're targeting for retaliation.
Well, there was like half a dozen people that are seen on that videotape going in and unlawfully copying software and lying to you about it in their depositions in your lawsuit. Those people have not been subpoenaed yet?
No, they haven't been subpoenaed. Now, it could be that the GBI, who is getting involved,
Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
Sure,
yes,
yes.
Go ahead.
that now we are aware in the last few days they have begun to set up appointments. And so perhaps they are trying to set up appointments with these people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Fonnie Willis is not letting any grass grow under her feet. You know,
right.
When she read, all she did is read the Washington Post reviews of the information that we had gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And what did she do? But she immediately started sending subpoenas. You know, it took her about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it has taken the state election board and the secretary 18 months.
And she's not even close, by the way, really, to Coffee County. She's up in Fulton County, about 200 miles to the north, although some of the people, actually, I think one of them, Kathy Latham, if I'm not mistaken, seen on the surveillance videotape, wasn't she one of the fake electors?
She was one of the fake electors.
Okay.
But as well, Sullivan Strickler, the firm that came in and copied all of the software and the data from the November election and January election, they have their offices in Fulton County, in Atlanta. So she has direct nexus right
good.
There.
Good, good. All right.
Yeah,
Has Raffensperger sat for an under oath deposition in your case against him yet, Marilyn?
No, he has not. That's something very difficult to get, and we've not yet really, asked the judge for that, other than saying that we may need to at some point.
But Gabe Sterling has, his deputy, right?
He has, and he is going to have to sit again because he did not come armed with all of the information he was supposed to have. So we have a deposition with him coming up again soon.
I hope you'll ask him about that Carter Center comment.
Marilyn, we certainly will be asking him about that.
Like I said, I have to get out here. So very quickly, how long at this point is your case expected to take? It's been going on for years now. Any sense of when it actually might be decided by a judge? If not before 2022, then maybe 2024?
Well, let's hope it's by 2024. But, you know, certainly with this kind of evidence, Brad, we should see this thing coming to an end. By any reasonable means, the Secretary of State and the State Election Board should be stepping up to say, okay, you've made your point, let's settle this thing.
Yeah, by any reasonable means. You're talking about Georgia. Marilyn, last question. Would the, as I said, Raffensperger, he's running for re-election this November. He'll be overseeing his own election on these unverifiable systems that he seems to be playing both sides of. There's a Democratic nominee for Secretary of State in Georgia this November. Bea Nguyen is her name.
Yes.
She's running against Raffensperger. Do you have any reason to believe that she would be more sympathetic to your lawsuit seeking to move the state to verifiable handmarked paper ballots if she were to win in November?
Yes, she has said that she believes that certainly hand-marked paper ballots with audits is the way to go, and so she has campaigned on that point, and we're pleased that candidates are out there campaigning on that point. We just wish Raffensperger were too.
Marilyn, the story will continue. I can guarantee that. Marilyn Marks is the executive director of the Coalition for Good Governance. You can find them at coalitionforgoodgovernance.org. And as you're reading about this story now finally being picked up in the rest and some of the rest of the media, please remember any new information coming out from this case is generally thanks to Marilyn Marks. You can follow her, and you should follow her, on the Twitters at MarilynMarks1. And the Coalition is also on Twitter, CoalitionGoodGV. CoalitionGoodGV. Marilyn, can't thank you enough for all you're doing and all your good work. It is so important that folks support you and your work. We are mighty grateful for everything you do.
And thank you so much, Brad, for following what we do and amplifying it. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with, oh, look, some Team Trump accountability news, Desi Doyen.
Okay, good. So
from the guy who is sort of protecting Team Trump with Brad Raffensperger, now to one of the Team Trumpers actually facing some accountability. That's straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Take It to the Limit?
Yes, it is, by the Eagles.
Good. I hope we take some of this sentencing to the limit for Steve Bannon. Get to him in a second. This, while we wait for accountability in the case of Trump's thousands of pages of stolen government documents, secretly or maybe not so secretly, I don't know, stored at Mar-a-Lago, including, as Washington Post reported on Tuesday night, incredibly highly classified documents relating to nuclear capabilities of a still unnamed foreign nation. While that story continues, a quick accountability update for the one guy on Team Trump who has already faced at least some actual accountability of late. While we were out last Friday, a federal judge flatly rejected Steve Bannon's request for a new trial following his conviction in July on two counts of contempt of Congress for failing to respond to a lawful subpoena from the bipartisan U.S. House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection and Trump's multiple failed attempts to steal the 2020 election. Judge Carl Nichols also rejected a motion from Bannon to dismiss the case entirely after the former Trump White House aide and campaign chair argued that not being able to compel certain members of the House to testify somehow violated his constitutional rights. Judge Nichols said that Bannon did not show that any potential testimony from House members would be material to the case, and thus, barring an appeal to a higher court, his Bannon sentencing can now move forward. After being found guilty on both counts, his sentencing will be on October 21, when he faces as much as a year in jail for each of those two counts. But that's not all for Bannon. Yeah, he's got even more trouble ahead, apparently. He is expected to surrender to state prosecutors in New York on Thursday to face a new criminal indictment. That weeks after he was convicted of contempt of Congress and nearly 2 years after he received a federal pardon from Donald Trump in a federal fraud case. The precise details of the state case in New York Have not yet been confirmed, but people familiar with the situation and the currently sealed indictment suggest the prosecution will likely mirror aspects of the federal case for which Trump granted Bannon a pardon.
Uh-huh.
In that indictment, prosecutors allege Bannon and several others defrauded contributors to a private $25 million fundraising scheme called We Build the Wall, pocketing funds that donors were told would go 100% toward construction of a barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border. That was a lie. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which handles state-level prosecutions, has been evaluating Bannon's alleged involvement in the scheme since shortly after Trump pardoned him for the federal version of the indictment. Presidential pardons only apply to federal charges. They cannot prohibit state prosecutions. So Bannon, he had pleaded not guilty to the federal charges in August of 2020 after authorities pulled him off of a luxury yacht, brought him to court. He was accused of pocketing $1 million in that scheme. Months later, in the last hours of his presidency, Trump included Bannon on a huge clemency list of about 140 people. Two other men, including disabled vet Brian Colfage, pleaded guilty in federal court in connection with that fundraising scheme because Trump did not bother to pardon them. He only pardoned Bannon.
His good friend.
Yep. When reached for comment, Bannon issued a statement through his spokesperson that described the indictment as, quote, phony charges and, quote, nothing more than a partisan political weaponization of the criminal justice system. Okay, Steve, that's why Donald Trump's Department of Justice initially indicted you for this crime, I guess.
And why you apparently needed a pardon for it.
So good luck with everything, Mr. Bannon, and we will continue to follow that story and all of the other accountability stories as they happen, if they happen, right here on the broadcast.
Yes, my goodness, there are so many grifters and con men in the Republican Party, and they seem to like it.
Being grifters?
Also being run by grifters, being overrun
yes,
by grifters.
They don't seem to mind it, do they?
No, they seem to actually embrace and enjoy it, which
anyway,
is surprising.
Yes, but we've got to get out. Our thanks to my guest today, Marilyn Marks of CoalitionForGoodGovernance.org, and of course to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, where there is no paywall. That is thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi and me stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am simply The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.